This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, April 25th, 2008. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, poems from the Fish House. Every now and again on this program, we look for interesting audio poetry sites on the internet. And you don't have to look very far before you come across From the Fish House, an audio archive of emerging poets. It comes out of Maine, and the founder and editor, Matt O'Donnell, joins me from his office at Bowdoin College. Hi, Matt.
Hello, Curtis. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So your site has over 1,000 audio poems, and I've poked through several of them, and I couldn't help but notice, because I'm an old radio producer, that these are not studio recordings. And in fact, I think there's a unique story about how you actually get all of these recordings from all of these poets. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Sure. When we first came up with the idea for Fish House, I say we, it was Camille Dungy and I. Mm-hmm. It started just as a personal project a couple of years ago because we wanted to hear more of our contemporaries read their poems. And so I had a little digital recorder, and I sent it to Camille to record her poems, and it sort of snowballed from there. So we decided, well, let's send a recorder out, or maybe a bunch of recorders, to a whole bunch of poets.
So you put together a little care package of an MP3 recorder or something like that, and mail it to the poet with instructions on what to do?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. And you know, over the past couple of years, I've slowly modified it, and you know, I try to make it poet-proof, which is a really difficult thing to do, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yeah.
The first generation recorders I sent out were really just MP3 players with voice recording capability.
Right.
So the sound quality on the first couple dozen poets we have up there isn't great. It's still perfectly fine.
Yeah, it's good enough.
Totally
good. And the first one we're going to hear today is actually probably one of the first ones you recorded or you sent out to be recorded, right? It's by Steve Scafidi, and it's called To Whoever Set My Truck on Fire. Could you tell us a bit about Steve Scafidi and this poem, if you would?
Sure. Steve's in West Virginia. He works as a cabinet maker down there, and he had a hard time finding a quiet time to record his poems.
I know what that's like, yeah.
Yeah, and he ended up recording them in his chicken house, in his hen house, at 1 in the morning. And this particular poem, Whoever Set My Truck on Fire, you can actually hear the chickens in the background in a little bit. And someone actually did come into his driveway and set his truck on fire. And so he struggles in this poem with those emotions.
Let's hear it. I'm going to play it directly off your website,
okay.
which is wonderful because you can read the poem and listen to it simultaneously the way it's set up, and it really works very well.
This is called To Whoever Set My Truck on Fire. But let us be friends a while and understand our differences are small and that they float like dust in sunny rooms. And let us settle into the good work of being strangers simply, who have something to say in the middle of the night. For you have said something that interests me, something of flames, footsteps, and the hard, heavy charge of an engine gunning away into the June cool of 4 in the morning here in West Virginia, where last night I woke to the sound of a door slamming, 5 or 6 fading footsteps, and through the window saw my impossible truck, bright orange, like a maverick sun, and ran I did, panicked in my underwear, bobbling the dumb extinguisher, too complex, it seemed, for putting out fires, and so grabbed a skillet and jumped about like one needing to piss while a faucet like honey issued its slow, sweet water. And you, I noticed then, were watching from your idling car, far enough away I could not make your plate number, but you could see me, half naked, figuring out the puzzle of a fire, 30 seconds from a dream never to be remembered, while the local chaos of a growing fire crackled through the books and boots burning in my truck. You bastard, you watched as I sprayed finally the flames with a garden hose under the moon. And yes, I cut what was surely a ridiculous figure there, and worsened it later that morning, after the bored police drove home lazily, and I stalked the road in front of my house with an axe in my hand, and walked into the road after every car to memorize the plates of who might have done this. LB7329, NT7663, and you may have passed by. I don't know. You may have passed by as I committed the innocent numbers of neighbors to memory, and maybe you were miles away, and I, like the woodsman of fairy tales, threatened all with my bright axe, shining with the evil joy of vengeance and mad hunger to bring harm, heavy harm, to the coward who did this. And if I find you, my friend, I promise you I will lay the sharp blade deep into your body until the humid, grabbing hands of what must be death have mercy and take you away from the constant, murderous swinging my mind makes, my words make, swinging down on your body. And may your children weep a thousand tears at your small and bewildered grave.
That was To Whoever Set My Truck on Fire by Steve Scafidi from his book Sparks from a 9-Pound Hammer, published by LSU Press in 2001. The audio is found on the website fishhousepoems.org. Now, Matt, that poem reminds me of a time, I think it was the only time my father ever hit me as a kid. And I don't know what I did. I did something terrible, but he was so upset with having hit me that he came back and he wanted to explain himself. And as he was explaining himself, he recounted what I had done to upset him in the first place. And as he recounted the poem, he got so upset that he hit me again the second time. That's exactly what that poem reminds me of. Because this poem sets off as a poem of forgiveness.
But let us be friends a while and understand our differences are small.
But then it slowly degenerates into a violent revenge fantasy.
And if I find you, my friend, I promise you, I will lay the sharp blade deep into your body.
And it's as if retelling the story rekindled the speaker's anger in it.
Yeah, and in rekindling it, though, I think it actually was cathartic for him because he said he basically hid in his bushes for 3 days after the incident. And, you know, he was so angry. The only thing that he was able to do was to go into his house and write this poem so that he could be done with the incident and, you know, get on with his life.
Jesus Hammo and carry to the captain. Jesus Hammo and carry to the captain. Jesus Hammo and carry to the captain. And tell him I'm gone. And tell him I'm gone.
The second poem we're going to hear is by Kayemba Jess, and it's called Lead Belly versus Lomax at the Modern Language Association Conference, 1934. Now, Lead Belly was the great blues singer and guitarist, and Alan Lomax was the great collector of American folk music who helped make Lead Belly famous in the 1930s and 1940s. And maybe you can help me out on this, but based on the title of the poem, I'm guessing that they both attended the Modern Language Association conference, or the MLA, in 1934. Is that true?
Yeah, I believe it is. This collection by Jess, which was a National Poetry Series selection in 2005, mm-hmm. is basically a verse biography of Lead Belly.
And this poem has an unusual structure to it, and I can't even pronounce what it's called.
It's stithomythic. Uh-huh. Stithomythic and contrapuntal.
Now, that sounds all complicated, but it's actually...
It does sound complicated, and the only reason I can use those big words is because those terms come from Jess himself, and then I look them up.
Uh-huh.
So, and stithomythic is from the Greek and is defined as line speak, which is, in its pure definition, a line-by-line conversation between two characters in split lines that join to form one often metrically correct line. And evidently it was originally used by dramatists to render intense debate. And when you listen to this poem, you'll hear how Jess uses the form. The poem is split down the middle with a thesaurus straight down the center of it.
Yeah.
And on one side of the poem, there's Lead Belly's voice. And then on the other side of the poem is Lomax's voice.
Yeah, and if I were just encountering this poem in a magazine or in a book, I would read it straight through from left to right to left to right. But the way he reads it is quite different. And let's hear it, and then we're going to interrupt the poem when it changes gears, and we'll explain why.
Lead Belly versus Lomax at the Modern Language Association Conference, 1934. A costume. Dark overalls, handkerchief, and ugly-ass shit-kickers, clutched like gifts in his outstretched hands, chased the stink of mule dirt back into my head. Now he wants me to wrap my music in a brown bag of coon to give them what folks expect to see. Says I need the genuine look of farm boy to sew blues' dirty fingers between their ears. I remember fame's promises. $100 suits is what made me believe. $50 wingtips made me a convert. $5 cigars helped seal the deal. Like always, dog-tongued anger laps at my palms, shrinks my bowels like a clenched fist. Let's face it, I'm parole on parade. Wanted poster on a short leash, biding time beneath the law of a master I chose myself. That faded rucksack of yassa growing one load heavier with each slow grin stitched across my lips.
So that was the left-hand side of the poem, and that was Leadbelly talking. Let's hear the Lomax part of it, which is read by Abraham Smith.
An outfit, new blue jeans, clean head wrap, some simple old sturdy shoes are a proper field hand's uniform. Down on the farm familiar, dressing down, it raises gods dark enough to capture the authentic blues, bringing Southland to a crowd that says they want to hear how it sounds for a black to scrape heaven's dusty starlight out of hell. To tally up and close accounts, $3 for the coveralls, and they were on sale, $1 for the work boots sold at half price, and here, a handshake serves as contract. It's strange, but sometimes loathing bursts from his eyes, pummeling me, striking across my face. Let's face it, I'm an ex-con's keeper, something I can't much forget in this prison-choked country. I cannot absolve this man of his greatest crime, the crime of race, binding us all to blood, cutting through skin, burning through history.
And this is what really surprised me when I first listened to it. Then we go back through the whole poem and the voices are blended.
Yes, it.
That must not be easy to do that as a poet, to put that together.
No, because he has to make the poem work, the lines work in three different ways successfully. And when the recorder came back, this was also early on in Fish House, and I remember sitting at my desk with the headphones plugged into the recorder and running into the kitchen and putting the headphones on my wife and saying, "Listen to this, this is what Fish House is about." You know, it really is the experience of hearing the poem. And I mean, this poem just really moved me.
Let's hear the last part of it with the voices combined.
A costume.
An outfit.
Dark overalls.
New blue jeans.
Handkerchief.
Clean head wrap.
And ugly ass shit kickers.
Some simple old sturdy shoes.
Clutched like gifts in his outstretched hands.
Are a proper field hand's uniform.
Chase the stink of mule dirt back.
Down on the farm familiar.
Into my head. Now he wants me.
Dressing down. It raises gods.
To wrap my music in a brown bag of coon.
Dark enough to capture the authentic blues.
To give them what folks expect to see.
Bringing Southland to a crowd that
says I need the genuine look of farm boy.
Says they want to hear how it sounds for a black
to sew blues' dirty fingers between their ears.
To scrape heaven's dusty starlight out of hell.
I remember
to tally up
fame's promises
and close accounts.
$100 suits is what made me believe.
$3 for the coveralls, and they were on sale.
$50 wingtips made me a convert.
$1 for the work boots sold at half price.
$5 cigars helped seal the deal.
And here, a handshake serves as contract.
Like always.
It's strange, but
dog-tongued anger
sometimes loathing
laps at my palms,
bursts from my eyes,
shrinks my bowels,
pummeling me
like a clenched fist,
striking across my face.
Let's face it. I'm parole on parade.
I'm an ex-con's keeper.
Wanted poster on a short leash.
Something I can't much forget.
Biding time beneath the law.
In this prison-choked country.
Of a master I chose myself.
I cannot absolve this man of...
That faded rucksack of yasser.
His greatest crime, the crime of race.
Growing one load heavier.
Binding us all to blood.
With each slow grin.
Cutting through skin.
Stitched across my lips.
Burning through history.
That was Abraham Smith and Tahemba Jess reading Jess's poem, Lead Belly versus Lomax at the Modern Language Association Conference, 1934. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, well, thank you, Curtis. I really appreciate it.
Matt O'Donnell is the founder, editor, and executive director of the audio poetry site From the Fish House, fishhousepoems.org. You can hear lots of audio poems on our website, too, poetryfoundation.org, where you'll also find essays and articles and all kinds of podcasts, including the monthly Poetry Magazine podcast. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The music used in this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.